Welcome and hello, everybody. This is the REI Society Podcast, where we are informing you everything real estate and business related so that you can be successful in REI investing. We're sharing the tools, tips, and stories from people who have already made it. And my name is Brandon Thompson, your host. Each week, we'll bring extraordinary guests so that you can learn real estate from the best. Mr. Bill Allen, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good, Brandon. How are you?
I'm doing great. And you were referred to me from one of my friends, Patrick Miller, and he told me a lot about you, but then I started researching you today and last night, and I was like, holy cow, this is mind-blowing. Like, you've done so much already in, what, 5 or 6 years? Is that right?
Yeah, it's probably been about 5 years since I really like started ramping up my business. It was like one flip a year for a few years before that. And I had a full-time job for about, and I left my full-time job in 2017. So it's only been about 2.5 years since I left that. So yeah.
Dude, that's incredible, man. So you own a business called Blackjack Real Estate that flips houses. And I know you have a few other things you're doing. We'll go into in a minute, but you're flipping over 200 homes a year and it's a veteran-owned business. You are a former Navy pilot. So why don't you tell us a little bit about being a Navy pilot and why real estate and flipping houses and so on?
Yeah, let me caveat that, because when people hear 200 flips, they think like we're actually buying, renovating, reselling 200 houses a year, which we're not. So we do, we're mainly wholesalers. We probably do about 80% wholesaling and about 20% flips. So we'll actually renovate and resell about, you know, anywhere from 25 to 20%, something like that. So a lot of those deals are wholesale deals where we're just turning the contract. But, you know, I was a Navy pilot. So, 2003 is when I got commissioned in the Navy, and I was an engineering background, and I flew helicopters and airplanes for the Navy. Just travel. I'd move like I probably moved 15 times in 17 years when I was in the military. So I was moving anywhere from 9 months to a year. And I had a CO that said, I bought a house at every duty station. I never lost money, a commanding officer. So I said, oh, maybe I'll just buy a house everywhere I go. So I'd kind of buy a house, fix it up a little bit, live in it, and then rent it out when I left. So that was kind of my goal, to get to like 10 rental properties, cash flow and making like 10,000 a year, and there's my 100 grand a year, and I was just going to stop at that. So in my mind, that's what it was. But got to travel all around the world. I lived in England for a year. I was a test pilot for the Navy in Pax River for a few years. I've been a flight instructor in airplanes. I still do that part time as a reservist. So I've done all kinds of stuff. But real estate was always kind of in the back of my mind. But I worked for the man for a long time, and I had no idea what it was like to own your own business. So that's kind of the background there on flying and that kind of stuff.
Yeah. A little fairy told me that you almost crashed a helicopter, or did you crash a helicopter in test pilot school? Tell me a little bit about that. That sounds like an interesting story, and I love interesting stories.
Yeah, so I went to test pilot school in England, and we send one American guy there a year, whether it's a helicopter guy or a fixed wing jet guy. So I was a helicopter pilot, and we send like one helicopter pilot every 3 years. And we do it at test pilot school. They let you test like the outside of the envelope when you're flying a helicopter. And We have flight test engineers that fly with us. So and then we have pilots. So we didn't have enough flight test engineers. So I was out doing like copying down data for an Australian guy that I was flying with. And I was the only American there. We had a lot of British guys. We had Australian guys. We had people from Germany and Switzerland and France and all over the world that come to the school. And we were flying these auto rotations. So we shut the engine down. We take it to the ground. And I was just sitting there, and you never really fly with another student, right? Another pilot. Usually it's me and an engineer. So this pilot's flying, and I said, and he's a buddy of mine. We're all friends. We all hang out. We all like have beers together on the weekends, and we work hard and we do projects together. So I said, hey man, that was a little bit lower than I usually flare the helicopter. And he goes, yeah, it's like, that's just kind of my style. So we flew, that was the first one he did. And then we flew probably 30 more of these. And then the winds changed and we moved over to the other runway. And he comes in and he just smashes the tail into the ground. And fortunately, he kept flying this thing all the way to the ground. You basically like flare the nose of the helicopter, slow down, and he just like crushed the tail into the ground. We could have flipped the helicopter over. He slid it on, did a great job. And then he looks over at me and he goes, that was a little bit low. And I said, yeah. And so I said, shut it down. I got out and looked at it. And we just completely destroyed the helicopter. Fortunately, we walked away from it. And the British way of doing things is way different than the American way. They would have made me pee in a cup in the US. They would have stopped me from flying for 3 or 4 days. Basically, they picked me up in a pickup truck, drove me back up, and it was at our base. They drove me back up to the shop and said, "Hey, you're late for a check ride in another helicopter. What the hell's wrong with you?" And so they ran me to another flight and I just kept going. So that was it. The helicopter was gone. I don't know if they fixed it or not. They would have to tell me after the next year, but yeah, we crashed it. It's pretty bad.
That's awesome. Well, let me ask you this. How old are you, Bill?
I'm 39. I'll be 40 this year.
Okay. So you're right around the same age as me. I'll be 38 this year. Been doing this for 17 years. And I think, you've like gone right past me from what I've researched here. I mean, you've got so much under your umbrella. There's so much here to talk about, but before we get there, I always like to bring a good story and bring it around full circle. So we know where you came from. So we know who you are, where you are in your head mentally and where you're going. And then we'll grow in all of your business and so on and so forth, and promote anything you want to promote. But why don't you tell us a little bit about us, about you, your background, and things like that prior to the Navy?
Yeah. So, you know, it's interesting. Before the Navy, I moved around coast to coast. My dad was on submarines. So I feel like my dad was an engineer. He wanted me to go join the Navy. That was kind of his push, like go do something, be something. I rebelled a little bit when I was younger. I didn't want to kind of follow the status quo, but I was an athlete. So I played soccer. I wrestled at a really high level. I was going to go play soccer in college. I decided to go the Navy route. I still played soccer, but not at a high level D1 school with all the scholarships that were coming. And that was kind of the balance that I had. Always been kind of somebody who wants to explore the envelope, if that makes sense. Like really push the boundaries and limits, obviously. And so, I was always just working really hard to accomplish my goals. And I saw my dad, we didn't have a lot of money when I was growing up. I saw my dad build an engineering company out of our basement. He basically started a company. We didn't have any money at that time. I remember that really they were kind of struggling to make ends meet, but they put us in the best schools, the best communities, areas that we probably didn't fit in when we got there. And he eventually made it. He did really well, built a great engineering business. And but it was kind of late in my life. It was around when I was getting to college that he was available. Normally, he'd just be working nonstop. And so I remember saying at the time, like, I want to do something like that at some point in my life. But for now, like, I was single for a long time. It was wife and kids before I really said, I really figured it out. So I don't know, maybe that's a roundabout way of saying a little bit who I am, but I definitely am like this type A personality, hard charger. I always want to be the best of the best. I'm always like battling to be the number one person wherever I am. You put me in a room with a bunch of other high achievers, I'm going to try to figure out how to outwork them, outsmart them, grow faster, bigger, stronger, that kind of stuff. So,
dude, that's badass. I love it, man. I'm the same way, man. I mean, we're never done 200 homes a year, 80% wholesales, 20% flips. But, we were flipping 150 homes a year at one point. Man, that's tough. That's tough. So leading into that, I want to go back to 5 or 6 years ago when you started Blackjack Real Estate. I know you gave us a little bit of the story there, but why don't you fill in the pieces and let us know what that was like going from a pilot in the Navy to real estate for your first year and doing one home at a time.
Yeah. So I was always investing in the stock market. I was an index fund investor. That was kind of what I thought would make me a millionaire. Like I looked down the road, I would just want to be a millionaire one day, right? And it had never crossed my mind that people were doing it. I never met anybody who did it in a year or 2 years or made $1 million in a year, these kind of folks. It just never crossed my world. I saw my dad build a $1 million engineering company, but I saw how hard he worked and it was like 15 or 20 years that it took him. And so I thought that was just normal. And so, when I was working for the Navy, I was making somewhere between 60 and once I got a little more senior, I'm probably in the $100,000 a year. And I thought that was really good. Like making $100,000 a year, I thought was it. So I would live off less than I made. I read a bunch of blogs. I was a pretty cheap guy. I still kind of am. I don't really spend a lot of money unless I look at everything as an investment. So I knew that I lived on about 55% of what I made and the rest of it went into savings, investments, things like that. And I just watched my net worth just like, it was like slowly ticking up. Yeah. And it was kind of boring. So at that time, I bought a rental and I was going to fix up this rental. My realtor said, hey, you know, you could sell this house and make some pretty good money after I fixed it up to rent out. And I said, she just wanted the second commission, you know? And I said, okay, let's try it. And I ended up making 43 grand on that house. And that was when the light bulb really like blew up for me. It was like, holy crap, you can make $43,000 in like 4 months. What could I do if I really applied myself here? So that was the first flip that I had done. And I was active duty. I was a test pilot in Pax River, Maryland, in Southern Maryland at the time. And I was doing it on the side. It was just like a side project. I would still work on the houses on the weekends and stuff like that, and just chip in here and there. And so I started looking for another one. It took me like 6 months to find another one. So then I did another one. So it was like one a year for the first 2 years. And that's when I listened to a podcast like this. I heard somebody talking about how they have systems and they don't see a house and all of these things. And I said, well, hey, this is pretty exciting. I'm interested in doing something like this, but I don't know how. And so I linked up with this guy. I paid him a bunch of money, and that got me into a room with people who were making $1 million in a year. Mm-hmm. And that's just when you sit next to somebody who you wouldn't recognize on an airplane, you wouldn't ever think that like they're just like you. They have the same morals as you, the same ethics. They're great people, down to earth people. They're not flashy. It's just when you see a projection of what's possible for you in someone else, it becomes possible, right? That's what happened. So I just saw it. I said, well, if he can do it, I can do it. And then I started basically just ripping off everything that he was doing and these two guys were doing basically. So these were kind of like my mentors, and I got access to their documents, to their systems, to their processes, to their email blasts, to all the tricks that they were using that they built up off the last like 10 years. It took them 10 years to get to there. And I said, well, I can take their 10 years and just take all their experience and just condense it down into a year or two, and I can get there faster. So that's what I did.
Dude, would you agree that access is everything? The mentorship, the masterminds, or whatever you want to call it, that is everything. That your network, that's what makes you grow, right?
Number one thing, like absolutely. And really, my biggest thing is like, why do we always try to just reinvent the wheel over and over? So I can relate it very well to the military. In the Navy, we go, as pilots, we go from command to command. They move us. 3 years is about the max that you stay there. And so you spend the first year or two just trying to figure out what the hell you're doing. And then the next year or the next 6 months, you figure out, you start to get some skills and start becoming, like understand what's going on. And then you might have 4 to 6 months in the squadron before they kick you out, where you know everything that's going on. And I saw it as a test pilot. You show up, and the only people that really understand what's going on are the people that have been there for 10 or 20 years. So you keep like moving around and reinventing, like you bring somebody new in all the time. Like, so why do we keep doing that? In England, they keep the subject matter experts in the squadron if they want to stay for 10 years, 15 years, 20 years. These guys are like the corporate knowledge. So for us, like if I can just transfer information from one person to another, it's the fastest way for me to say, this guy's already proven it. He's done it. He knows what's happening. Just give it to me. Like, why? I'll pay for speed. I'll pay for growth. I might be a little biased because I bought in the beginning. Honestly, I was the cheapest person in the world, and I was stroking a check for $25,000. I was like, that's a car. My mind didn't work right because people look at it as an expense, not an investment. And there's no better investment to make for me, the way that I work and operate, than in myself.
Right.
So I know that if I'm going to bet on myself, there's no other bet I'd rather make than that, because I can control it.
Yeah, dude, that's so good, man. I mean, I couldn't agree more. I think with real estate, there is a negative connotation with mentors or gurus or investors teaching other people, and unfortunately, some people have been taken advantage of. But let's face it. I mean, if you want to rapid scale your business and not wait 10 to 12 years to become a millionaire, you got to hire somebody. And I'll just say from my own experience, I started off and whenever, I guess 17 years ago, I mean, I started off before flipping became a major thing. And I got to the point where, you know, before it was on HGTV, before it was on all these different shows, these reality shows, I was doing it and I was just, you know, blood, sweat, and tears. I didn't know what the hell I was doing. And then by 2008, I lost everything because I was over leveraged. I couldn't figure it out and do it the right way. but to have somebody take you by their hand and to show you, to save you so much time, pain, trouble, yada, yada, yada. Dude, I mean, it just makes you craft your skills so much more quicker, which I'm sure that's why you're teaching and training as well. But
I think there's a reason. In any industry, right, there's the people who are really good that you should listen to, and there's the people who are going to take your money. Like, it doesn't matter what it is. You can use any industry, this is going to happen. So like, my biggest thing when I talk to people about this is find the people that you resonate with, find the person that you know you can trust, find the person that like when I was sitting next to that guy, some people are not going to be attracted to that, like what he's saying and what he's doing, how he carries himself. They might want to drive Lamborghinis and Ferraris and flashy stuff, and they wouldn't necessarily be attracted to that. So there's somebody for everybody. But what I will say is there's a lot of people out there that are just looking at it as money instead of looking at it as like impacting people. The biggest thing for me, like the reason why I do it and give back to other people, and I'm going to charge for my time too. There's no doubt about it. But it's because those people poured into me. So I'm creating, like, it's so cool. It's like, it becomes like this family tree almost, you know? It's like you got this grandfather and now that has the kids and then those kids, and you just see the impact that you can make on other people. And we also have a business that doesn't necessarily compete with everybody else. Like, Tesla's not going to do this and McDonald's not going to do it. And all of these other companies, they're not going to share what they're doing, but we have the ability to do that because we don't all live in the same backyard and I'm not taking over the entire world. So yeah. I don't know. It's I had a negative connotation to coaching and training before this because that's what so many people like complained about and were talking about. They just like followed the wrong person. Just, hey, take ownership of that. You gave the wrong person money. That guy scammed you out of money. So just find somebody that you like really resonate with. That's what I always tell people. And I mean, it might be me, it might be you, it might be somebody else, but find your people and stick with your tribe, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. I love that word too, tribe. So you're not trying to compete with everybody, but you're not necessarily trying to take over the world, but you are taking over. Let me read the list. Pensacola, Florida, Chattanooga, Tennessee, Nashville, Tennessee, Huntsville, Alabama, Bowling Green, Kentucky, and I'm guessing Spring Hill, where you live over in Tennessee as well, right?
Yeah, we don't do much business in Spring Hill. It's just a little bit too nice. We might get a house or two down there, but it's like metro Nashville, you know? So there's still so many deals that come from all these areas. Like, there's hundreds of deals you don't even know are happening in all those cities that I never even see. So usually I'll look at all the wholesalers lists that, you know, I'm on everybody's list. They send out deals and not even in our database. So I don't know. I'm much more of a collaborator than a competitor.
Dude.
But I am competitive. I am highly competitive. So if there is one that's on our list that it gets emailed to me, you'll believe my COO gets it forwarded to him and I say, hey, what happened to this one? Why didn't we get it? But you know, I'm happy to help. I love helping people. So
yeah. I tell all my coaching clients, I say, hey, don't compete. We just need to collaborate with one another. And you did, you just took the words right out of my mouth. All right. So Blackjack Real Estate, you guys are serving a lot of homeowners. I actually had a chance to scan your website. You guys are doing it in a little bit different fashion. I found some cool little pieces on there I want to talk to you about. Let's go into Blackjack and go into your HGTV story, and then we'll kind of lead up to more and more cool stories from there. How about that?
Okay, that sounds good. Let's see. So yeah, you think you're talking about a house that I lost some money on, huh? So I'd say the biggest thing that I've learned over the past couple of years that hopefully your listeners can take from this is to really like develop your niche, like know what your core focus is and stick to it. And I was in the beginning of all this, I was kind of a deal junkie. Basically, everybody would send me something and I was always like, in my background when I was a kid, I'd always try to take a dollar and turn it into $2, whether it was like selling candy at middle school that I almost got like kicked out of school for. I had a whole shop that I set up, or mowing lawns, or like taking golf balls and cleaning them up and reselling them, whatever it was, like all these schemes and things that I had to make money. And I feel like when I came into real estate, all I saw was dollars. There's so many shiny objects all over the place, right? So I still own some land from like 2015 that I didn't know what I was doing when I bought it. And hopefully it's going up in value and I'll eventually sell it. In fact, my COO today said, hey, I think this is worth a lot more than you think it is now that we know more about land. So I was just saying yes to just about everything. So we started buying some of these like bigger flips, like more luxury type houses down in Pensacola. So I bought this one that it was a lottery winner. She had won the lottery. They won like $1.8 million in the lottery. And it won the lottery like 9 months before they're trying to sell this house back to me. They dumped like $400,000 in renovation to this house, but it was all like a bunch of junk, like expensive tile, LED lights that were flashing and sound systems and stuff that added no value to the house, right? It just wasn't, it wasn't increasing the value. It was more like making it on MTV Cribs or something. So so I went there and they held a note. I got a second lender to come in to handle the second, and they just needed to pay their taxes. They had like $500,000 in tax to pay. So we ended up buying the house. It is a really long story. These people tried to sell the note to somebody else. I said, no, they're selling it at a discount. I brought a buddy of mine in to buy it at a discount. So their note was like $450. They wanted to sell it for $400. He bought it. So a $50,000 discount on a note. So instant 50 grand. So anyway, we fixed it up a little bit. It was just supposed to be a clean out, put it back on the MLS, but it's a really high price point down in Pensacola. Not a lot of people that are looking at houses that size. It was on HGTV. It was on Beach Hunters. It was one of the three houses. We've had two houses down there. Neither one of them did too well in the luxury area. And so there was a railroad track that ran by the water there, not far from the house. I thought the house and the beachfront and the dock and everything that we had was be fine, but people, that was the big turnoff to that house. And I even had a lender come in and say, he's in Atlanta. He's a buddy of mine. And he said, I'm not going to lend on this house because the railroad tracks. Been in real estate for probably 20 years. He's a realtor, flips a lot of houses, builds new houses. Just said to me, I'm not interested, but I'll do the one down the street. I said, all right. And so that should have been my first red flag. Anyway, sat on the market. We did the inspection. I had to do a little bit more work to clean up some wood rot that we didn't find we didn't pull off the siding or anything. Ended up losing 70 grand on this house. And I learned a valuable lesson. Fortunately, we're doing like 150,000 a month then. So I didn't feel it that much because we still had some other deals that helped out that month. I was in the red on the P&L that month for sure. But my lenders made $50,000, which to me was the biggest story that I have coming out of this. Is you take care of your people, they'll continue to invest money with you. You do the right thing. You stand by your word. Neither one of these guys know now because I've told the story from stage a couple times. And I actually just talked to a buddy of mine who had the second. And I said, hey, you know that story that I told at the event that you just attended? And that was the house that we did a deal. He's like, yeah, I was wondering. But they never know because they'll continue to invest with me. So I didn't go to them and say, hey, guys, can we adjust the interest rate? Sorry, I can't. I lost money on this. I need to not pay any interest, stuff like that. And it's just about doing the right thing for your people. So that was a big one. Lesson I learned, we stick in the first and second time home buyer areas, these more expensive houses. I lost about $120,000 that year on two houses that were over $500,000-$600,000 houses in that area. So just a mistake. Right.
Yeah, I agree, man. It's you know, sometimes you will lose money. A lot of people think that if you just go slow and cautious, you won't. But every once in a while, you'll get into a deal where either contractor screws you, or maybe you bought something that was a quote unquote a dud next to the railroad tracks. You were bullish on it, but it really kind of bit you in the ass. Last year, I lost $38,000 on a project. I've been doing it for 16 years at the time, and I've never lost money on a property. And it finally came back to bite me because I was running about 20 projects at a time, not really overseeing the property. I don't have a COO, so I'm the one going out every 2 weeks. And, you know, long story short, snake bit me. So, yeah, and my lenders never knew which property it was, and I'm going to always pay them. I'm not going to, you know, I will say this, going back to 2008 and kind of similar times, I guess, hopefully we're not leading ourselves into, but, you know, if you don't take care of your lenders, you're done for a few years.
Yeah. I mean, private money is key right now, right? So the lenders are pulling back as we do this podcast, I spent my whole day yesterday dealing with stuff like that with our members, with some of the lenders that we work with inside of my group now. It's like coming off of the 100% financing. People are expecting to have that all the time. It's really that relationship, the people relationship is what this business is all about. People think it's about real estate, but no, it's about people. You take care of people, do the right thing. It's the sellers, it's the buyers, it's the lenders, it's everybody, it's the contractors, it's all that stuff. We take care of each other. We're going to run a good business.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's keep moving forward. So It was a one-man show for a while. How long was it a one-man show?
So actually, the second that I joined that mastermind group, I said, I never want to hire anybody. I'm scared to hire somebody. I still remember this conversation with my mentor. I said, nope. I realize that you have like 15 people working for you. I don't want to be responsible for anybody. Don't want to put food on their table. And in fact, my goals weren't very big then. I wanted to flip 12 houses a year, make $30,000 a house. And so that'd be 360 grand on the side while I was still flying, making 100,000 with the Navy. So that was my kind of goal. And he just looked at me and said, well, you tell me how that's possible. You're doing one a year right now and struggling. So how are you going to do it without other people? So think about what you want to do and think about what your goals really are. And so I came off that call, and about a week later, I said, all right, I'm in. Just tell me what to do. And so I was going to do a bunch of marketing and kind of start my own marketing process. And I couldn't answer the phone because I was flying all day. I was working about 10 to 12 hours a day, every day, 5 days a week for the Navy then, and one weekend a month. So I hired somebody the first day. I hired somebody before I sent my first mail pieces out. And so it was always me and somebody else from the beginning of that. I had done it, tried to do it myself for about 4 months before that, before I hired somebody to help me, a mentor. And no fruit from that labor, I'll tell you that. Because that was the time where people were still sending to voicemail or answering live. There was kind of this debate then about 5 years ago where there was a lot of the people that I knew in my mastermind group that I joined that were still sending people to voicemail. And there were people kind of split testing that and saying, look, when we're talking to the person on the phone live, we're converting at a much higher rate and we're being able to get them on the phone. So I said, all right, I'm going all in with that concept. Paid a lady $500 a week, answer my phones. So $2,000 of my $5,000 budget was a person. So we did that my first year. I started that first year, and then it took me 4.5 months to put my first wholesale deal money in the bank. So I spent money for 4.5 months. I spent about 23 grand of my $30,000 like budget that I was spending for the first 6 months before I put a dollar in the bank. So most people will quit after 2 or 3 months. I see it happen time and time again. And so it was her and I for a while. And then I hired an acquisitions person, a salesperson to come in and help me. Because I wasn't able to go on the appointments full-time because I had a full-time job. And so I was like cherry picking all the deals. The stuff that sounded good on the phone is all I would go to. And when she came in, she blew it up. She started dropping contracts left and right from stuff that didn't sound motivated on the phone. She just go on appointments to practice, go out. And so we had about four people and me at the end of that first year. I hired a transaction coordinator, somebody to do the deal with the sellers and the buyers and the title companies. And then it was just one title company at that time. And then at the end of the year, I hired somebody to sell the contracts. That was the last thing that I gave up. The thing I really thought I was best at, that business-to-business sales, which I love to do. Yeah. And then I kept the marketing. I kept the marketing for like 3 years until my COO came in. And then we have a chief marketing officer in the company now. So
tell us about your COO. What does he do? And you know, how does that free up your time so that you can do what you're designed to do?
Yeah, he does everything. So he was like, in the beginning, he came in about 2.5 years ago. This is 2020. It was the beginning of 2018. So we started 2018 together, and he left a corporate job where he was making really good money working for Nissan. And he came in and just took over the team. And so for me, I was spinning a lot of plates. Like everything was going through me, and everybody looked to me for the answers. And I needed somebody who could manage the process and the people, and I could kind of do some of the visionary stuff. Like if we want to do bigger things, big relationships, big projects, raise money, that kind of stuff. I was dropping that for more detailed things. So he came in and he started shuffling around the team. So just digging into all the inefficiencies. Like when you build a company and a business, you think that everything's great. You bring somebody else in to analyze it who's a high-level thinker like you. Oh, we had a lot of problems. So we turned over. We actually don't have a single person in the company with us now that was with us then. So, wow. We had 120% turnover that first year. So everybody that was with us in the beginning wasn't with us. And 20% of the people that we hired that year didn't make it either. It was a big culture change that we did together. We built out our core values. We We built out EOS, so Gino Wickman's book, Traction. We actually implemented, that was his first job, was to implement that. And we were loosely operating off of it, but there was no accountability when it was just me. So right. He came in, he runs everything now. So him and I meet for about 2 hours every other week. And that's pretty much all the time that I spend there. But now we're meeting a little bit more now. Going to meet once a week for sure, if not talk a little bit more on the phone, just as things are changing in the marketplace right now. I'll be a little bit more involved than I was. The last year, I really wasn't involved much at all.
Yeah.
And that didn't happen overnight, by the way. So if anybody's listening, like, oh, I just got to hire a COO. It was about 6 to 8 months, probably 8 months of us meetings and working together every day that year of 2018. 2018, we were like attached to the hip to each other.
Yeah. Well, leading up to, before we go into some other cool things here, it's March 24th as of the date of this podcast. This will probably come out in 2 or 3 weeks from now. The March 24th, 2020, what do you feel like this environment, the coronavirus environment is doing to real estate in the nation?
I think the biggest thing for me is I've never been somebody who's going to like pontificate of what I think is going to happen of like real estate markets or stock markets, because I honestly don't know. There's a couple things that I do know. I know that there's a lot of uncertainty and people are scared and feeling uncomfortable. And what that does is it makes people pull back and start saying, I don't like the way this feels. And when lenders start to pull back, then your flippers start saying, oh, hey, I need to start reevaluating this. And I mean, I've even got some people saying now that when they look, like now I'm running comps based on the last 3 months, but I even won't run my comps based on the last 3 months because I don't know what the next 3 months are going to bring. And they're like, dude, a month ago, you didn't know what the next 3 months were going to bring either, but you still ran your comps that way. Like at some point, we've got to decide kind of what's happening. Right now, there's so much uncertainty that it's just fear. Like a lot of it is fear driven and I feel uncomfortable. Like some people's, like the companies in the stock market didn't change their valuation. It's just the fact that you feel like your net worth is lower right now because of how much the stock dropped. So I feel like I have 30% less money. I'm also not leaving my house. So I'm holding on to my money a little bit more. So there's people that just, they make decisions based on all these emotional triggers. And what it does is it kind of there's this domino effect. And I feel like my company is in a really good position where like we're in a great cash position. We're profitable. I can run a couple months with my team and my staff and continue to market and all of these things. I got people that I help, you know, we coach and mentor people all over the country right now. And they're like, I'm not sending any mail. I'm not changing anything. I'll change some things when I start seeing an effect personally on what's happening. We're not getting as many contracts. People aren't buying. But what I tend to do is I'm just going to keep going until I'm proven differently. And then I'll make an adjustment based on that. We're adjusting some of our offer profiles based on what we think our buyers are going to want to do. So the best thing about a wholesaler for me is we have thousands of people on our buyers list in all these cities. And it just takes one person to buy one of these contracts. So I need one person. And it's not like we're doing 1,000 deals a month. We're doing like 20 deals a month. So I need one person to buy 20 different contracts per month. Right. And if we start seeing adjustments and changes, we'll adapt. So, you know, I don't know what, I don't even, like, if you asked me this last week, we would even be having a different conversation than right now. Like if you asked me this on Thursday, I wouldn't even say, yeah, all the lenders are going to pull back the way that they did. So it's evolving so fast that I really hesitate to say what's going to happen a week or two or a month from now. I think we probably have like a couple months of uncertainty. And then I'm hoping, and I really do think that the demand of houses and buyers is strong enough to be able to come back out of this in the future. So I want to be in a place where I'm building my infrastructure, built business, lead volume, all of that stuff. I'm going to continue to build that up so I can explode out of the gate when other people are still sleeping.
That's a good thinking. That's a good way to think about this, because right now it's a long story. We're not going to tell my story. We're talking about you. But what I experienced in 08 was a lot of uncertainty, a lot of people freaking out, a lot of distress. And then some lending relationships put me out. But what I experienced was within a few months to a year, it's like everybody was ready to sell. Like they were just so fearful. They're calling people up that I knew that were buying homes up, the wholesalers of that day, a decade ago, 12 years ago. There's so much money to be made in the next upcoming several months. If you're an opportunist and you don't quit, you keep doing what you're doing, you're going to be able to go right out the gates, you know, guns a-blazing, just ready to go. You're going to make so much money if you don't stop and if you just don't give up, you keep moving forward. So that's why I'm excited about a recession, because it weeds out the weak. Talking about competition, you know, going back to that, trying to be the best you can. The competition, I always like collaboration more than competition, but the competition has become so fierce. For the first time in 17 years, I've ever seen it. So many wholesalers now, so many flippers. A lot of them are just newbies and novices, and they're just trying to get rich quick. They're not really trying to serve the public. They're not really trying to serve anybody except for themselves. They're not helping anybody necessarily. They're just trying to make a quick dollar. I'm so grateful that they're going to be out of business. I hate to be like that. Yeah. I will make a public statement. Like, it just makes it so much easier for a professional like you and I that actually does have integrity, that wants to help people, that wants to just really serve them. So
I think we have three people. The way I look at this, so you have three like buckets here right now. You've got the person who's got a stable business, strong foundation, has cash reserves, has been making money for a couple years, is financially ready to go through something like this. And this could be real estate investors, it's business owners, it's anybody. I mean, I've got my kid's school that's saying, hey, we're going to keep charging you for daycare, even though we're closed. I'm like, I can't keep charging my customers when I close my doors. This is like, that's not my fault that you haven't profitably run your business for the last few years. You don't have enough cash reserves to continue to pay your teachers. I'm going to do it because I don't want to lose the daycare. But it could go for anybody, like the pizza shop, all these things. Like if you only have 2 weeks of like payroll to continue, you're in an issue. So you have the people who have strong foundation and they're set up. You have the people who are somewhere that don't, right? They're doing it. They're in the business and they're like rapidly scaling, or they were growing and they were saying like a year from now, I'll start to be profitable, or like I'm building that. So if this happened to me a couple of years ago, I might be in a little bit more of a jam than I am right now. This we had last year, the word for me was stability, like really stabilize and make sure that we have a good foundation built and get ready for something like this. And then you have the people who are just getting going. And so I think that like bucket one and bucket three are in the best place to make the opportunity. So if you think of like the stock market, that when the prices drop right now, and I got this, like, I'm going to jump in right now. Like there's no better time to jump in right now. So the people who are like sitting on the sidelines, full-time job, maybe they get fired or something like that, like, or they want to move into another avenue, this is probably like the best time to start educating yourself and then jump into real estate. And then the people who are already in there, like having a great business that can withstand this, and they already have the infrastructure that can come out of the gate really strong, they're going to be killing it. The people who are jumping in, they can start learning in an area where hopefully we have an upward trend from here. The people in the middle are the people who are going to get squeezed and crushed. And I feel bad for them, because there's a lot of the people that we work with right now. There's a lot of people that are out there, and there are some people who just are just jumping in and being stupid, and they just don't belong there. I mean, we're professionals. It's a full-time job for me. It's a full-time job for you. This is what we do, and this is what we've done. And then we've got people who are kind of building their house on a weak foundation. Just trying to pull money out and drop it, you know, just stuff money in their pocket. And those are people who are overpaying for the house and, you know, over leveraging and doing all those things, that they're going to get bit in this, I think. So that's where I think we are.
Right. I completely agree. I'm going to start spitting off different names, and I want you to just tell me your thoughts.
Okay.
Yeah. Not people, but okay. Stuff that I found on stuff that I see that you're doing. Tell me about Blackjack Gives Back.
Okay. So I'm a military veteran, obviously. I still fly for the reserves. I'm in my 18th year of service. I did almost 15 years of active duty. This is my third year in the reserve. So we wanted to do something. My COO is a former police officer too. So, and then a couple people that work for me, either they were military or their spouses are military. And so, you know, I have a passion for veterans, obviously. So what we said, like a year ago, we said, maybe it was almost like a year and a half ago, we said, we want to figure out how can we, if we're going to do 100 houses or 200 houses a year, like how can we take one and give it away? So what we did was we bought a house last year, and it was a cheaper house somewhere, like I think we bought it for 30 grand. And then we're fixing it up right now. And the plan is we'll give it away to a combat wounded or Gold Star veteran. So combat wounded vet or a Gold Star vet. And we're working with a charity to do that. So what we'll do is we raise all the money. We did all the work and we'll fix up the house. And the house will be worth like somewhere between 110,000 and 120,000 when we get done. We'll give it away mortgage free to somebody. We said like, we don't know how to give it away. We don't know who to give it to, right? It's just not fair for us to pick somebody out of a hat or something. So what they do is they'll vet the person, they have a list, they'll put it out and they'll take somebody's application and then they'll also manage that vet for 3 years. So it'll get deeded over in 3 years if they meet the requirements. Because I mean, somebody could just take a house, turn around and sell it again, take the money and move. So what they do is they make sure that they follow the plan, they counsel them for 3 years and then they give it away to them. So we wanted to do one last year. This house, like the logistical, it's a challenge to figure out how to get the grants and get people to donate their time and money and all this stuff. So we essentially just are raising all the money, or we're doing it. We're putting our money, company money back into it this year. And we should be done in about a month, actually. When this comes out, it probably won't be far from where that first house we gave away. And we wanted to try to do like one, then two, then five, then 10. So like my big dream is that we give 10 houses away per year. It's become a bit of a challenge. I think we found another charity that has the scalability to do that. Part of it was the partnership that we have. And there's nothing wrong with the charity that we're working with right now. It's just the way that we want to do it. I want to be in control of the house until it's done. Usually they take it over and they hire somebody to do the work, but we want to do it all in-house. So.
Dude, right on. What an incredible mission. Going on for another mission, Operation Underground Railroad.
Yeah.
Dude, this is freaking badass. Just tell us all about it. I saw this and I got chills.
Yeah. So Operation Underground Railroad is a organization that rescues kids from sex trafficking, sex slavery, and they also do some fight against organ harvesting and then labor trafficking. So a lot of human trafficking for labor also. So it's not just sex trafficking. These guys are kicking down doors and rescuing kids. There's previous Navy SEALs. CIA, Department of Homeland Security folks. I've met some incredible people with this organization, people I used to fly around in the back of my helicopter in the Navy. And they're just doing some awesome stuff. There's also, they set up aftercare with everywhere that they go before they go into any operation. And these they're doing it here in the US and overseas. So I got introduced to them by my mentor. It's just an incredible organization. I'm the Tennessee volunteer director. So anybody that volunteers in Tennessee, they'll come through me and talk to me or my assistant. We just try to raise money, raise funds, and raise awareness for the organization. So it's an incredible mission. The biggest thing, if anybody's listening, you can go to ourfilm.org and check out the documentary. Russell Brunson, another mentor of mine, put together a 2-hour documentary on it that he goes through everything. You can learn all about the organization. It's an incredible mission. Most human trafficking, sex trafficking organizations do mainly awareness to learn about it. These guys are doing it all. Awareness, kicking down doors, operators. That's what kind of drew us to it. Me and my CEO, Nate, that's just one day he just said, hey man, we got to get more involved here. And we are. So we do a lot of different like fundraisers here around Tennessee and Nashville.
Excellent, excellent. All right, so... 7-figure flipping. Saw the website. -2, a veterans conference, yearly masterminds, podcast. What do you not do? Do you wear a cape and fly too?
I get to fly for the Navy, but I don't wear a cape. No.
Awesome.
Yeah. We're doing a lot of things. So it's busy. Sure. That's one of the reasons why I have a COO, because he takes that stuff off my plate. So all the blackjack real estate stuff, I don't have to deal with that stuff. So now I get to go do the fun stuff like you're talking about.
Yeah. And then I'm sure this is your passion. Yeah, just hearing you talk, I can tell you like to mentor and coach people. So why don't you tell us a little bit about your podcast, your mastermind, your coaching enterprise, and just tell us who, what, when, where, why.
Sure. So 7-figure flipping was the organization that I joined 5 years ago. So I paid $25,000 to join that mastermind group. For 2 years, I was a paying member. And then the owner of the mastermind asked me to come in and help like coach and mentor some people because I had blown up my business the way I did. We pretty much got to $1 million run rate in the first like eight or nine months. And so I did that. And then I became the COO of the company. And that's really that was the main catalyst to bring Nate, my COO, over to Blackjack because I needed some time. Mm-hmm. So I came...
came out of there, started running the company for him. And then he said, hey, I'm getting burned out on this. I'm ready to kind of retire. Would you be interested in buying the company? And about 9 or 10 months ago, I said, yeah. At first I was like, there's no way. I'm not interested. It's too much. And then I saw what I thought was going to happen to the organization. I wasn't sure what would happen to all of our members and the people that I brought in. Like I was one of the salespeople too. Recruit is probably the wrong word. I would like bring people in. I would refer people. And anybody who referred anybody, I would get on the phone with them and talk about my story and stuff and how it's changed my life. And so I said, okay, yeah, I'm ready to carry the torch for you. I'm interested. I'll explore this. So we came up with it. And so I bought the company and we have a bunch of events that we do. We have two different programs and mastermind meetings. We have a big event called Flip Hacking Live. It's like our huge event that we do every year. This year it's in Orlando in October. Last year we had about 650 people there. This year we're shooting for like 1,000 to 1,200 is the goal. So yeah, that's where I spend pretty much all my time now, 40, 50 hours a week doing that. It's fun. I love doing that. There's nothing better than seeing somebody. Like I'm doing this. I got the podcast called Seven Figure Flipping Podcast. When I'm doing some interviews right now about people who get some of our members in our Seven Figure Runway group that are getting their first deal. They've done their first deal. It's like, I'm going back in time 5 years. They're doing backflips in their living room and they get this contract signed. They're just telling me these stories. Just so cool to hear that and relive through that. And it gives you a lot of perspective in what you take for granted now after doing, you know, hundreds and hundreds of deals. So it's cool.
That's awesome. You may have touched down on this, but what is Dash 2?
Oh, Dash 2 is an event that we did to help people who are looking to hire a COO. So Nate and I did a 2-day conference here in Nashville this year. And it was a lot of some of our members, it was people outside of our community who are looking to figure out how to remove themselves from their business. And so it was basically like, how do you hire, train, and onboard a COO for your company to remove yourself? So higher level folks, we had about 30 people that came. And really, it was me and Nate talking about our relationship, how you find somebody, what kind of ad to put up, what you're looking for. And then it became a lot of the questions people asked is like that hiring and training and managing also passed on over to their staff too, talking about their leadership team and things like that. So we talked a lot about hiring. It was the first time we did it, and we'll probably do it again. With everything that's happened, you know, having a meeting like that and stuff. But we're kind of like waiting for the demand signal to say, do it again. It's a little bit more of the passion thing for Nate. He really enjoyed doing it and it was his time to shine. That was like his conference, putting it together, setting it up. It was the Nate Johnson show. So it was really cool to watch him do all that and everybody that was there just blown away. So it was cool. It was fun. So Dash 2 being, if you're a military aviator, it's a lead aircraft and a wing aircraft, like the CEO and COO. So it's what we kind of called it, like this, your wingman.
All right. Right on. Well, I need to listen to your podcast. I am looking forward to listening to that. I have not listened to it yet, but so what was the name of your Flip Hacking Live? Was that the name of it in October is when you're doing your...
Yeah. Yeah. Flip Hacking Live is, it's a great event. I'd highly recommend. I mean, the biggest thing that we do there is we bring people on stage. It's 3 days. And we leave it all on the table. It's like, let me show you how to do it. So people, you know, buy a ticket and they'll leave with everything that they need to ramp up their business. Everybody on the stage is running a 7-figure business or above. It's really cool. Last year, one of our guys showed people how to flip a house in 7 days. And he just got done flipping 4 houses in 7 days. So 4 houses, they were 2 duplexes next to each other. He just got done in 7 days on the market right now.
Yeah. So. What is one of the things they do? Like model the masters, take pictures out of the MLS, pay your contractors to make it look just like this. Doesn't matter what the tile or this or that looks like. Just make it look as close to this as you can.
You should see what he did. He's got 25 subs in there at one time. He got a cargo container on the driveway with all the materials in there and everything. It's amazing what they do. And it's a full $30,000 to $40,000 rehab per house. It's insane.
That's pretty cool. My former business partner and I, we almost had a TV show with Tom. I think it was Tom Foreman, the executive creator of, oh gosh, some kind of reality show called Extreme Home Makeover back in the day. So we flew down to California and got to be guests with him. And then he came back here and put a TV show in Kennesaw, Georgia with Holmes, the reddish balding guy on HGTV.
Oh, yeah.
And I was on one of those shows where they had 25, we weren't on the show, but we were on set where they had like 25 subs on top of each other. It's like mind blowing. I can't believe it. It's so awesome, man.
We're gonna make a mini series out of his. I sent my videographer, and we're gonna, and maybe I'm giving it away to everybody. We're gonna make a mini series on what he did. So it's gonna be cool. So right. We'll do it in house though. Nobody's getting the rights to that thing.
Congrats.
Create our own HGTV channel.
Heck yeah, man! So, everything's available right now. What's your favorite thing that you do? Out of everything that you have your hands tied to, what is your most favorite thing that you are most passionate about?
Like in work. Work side. Yeah. I think sharing stories and telling stories about primarily leadership, like right. building a team and leading people and just motivating people to take action. I think that the best thing that we could possibly do is motivate somebody to take an action, because that's the hardest thing that people struggle with is taking that step. And then once they take that first step, then it's, you can walk, right? So I think like just sharing stories and talking to people and meeting new people and stuff. So,
right. That's cool, man. Well, let's just end with some rapid fire questions. That's how most people, into podcasts. So why try to reinvent the wheel? Talking about passion, what are you most passionate about outside of work?
Flying. I got a little airplane, 6-seater for me and my family, and I love taking my 5-year-old out flying and just getting up in the air. It's awesome. Yeah.
You have a 5-year-old boy or girl?
I have a 5-year-old boy. I have a 5-year-old boy, a 3-year-old boy, and a 2-year-old boy.
So, oh man, 3 boys. Awesome.
My house is crazy.
I bet. I've got nothing but girls. And we've had 2 female dogs, and one had to be put down a few years ago. I told my wife, next time we get a dog, I'm getting a boy. She said no. So she went out of town several months ago, back in September, and she came back home to a male Yorkie.
Oh, wow.
She didn't talk to me for a couple of days.
Oh man! I wouldn't even know what to do with girls. I have no idea. We got a boy dog. We got boys. It's I have a brother. I grew up with a brother. No girls in the house ever. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know what to do.
I hear you. What is your favorite movie and why? I'm a pop culture junkie, so I like to ask. Books, movies, documentaries.
Yeah. So I saw this on your list, and it's a tough one. So I always say, like, there's a movie that I've watched a million times, and it's American Pie. And why? Because it is hands down the funniest movie I've ever seen. And I still watch it. I still think of where I, like, in college with us watching it just nonstop. So, it's probably not the most, I don't know. It's not probably not the answer most people are probably thinking, like, yeah, he's probably got some, like, I don't know, entrepreneurship movie or Top Gun or something like that. I didn't even watch Top Gun until after I got my wings. Yeah. So I do like watching Top Gun. That's kind of fun. But American Pie is the movie that I love. There's a bunch of movies that I've seen. I love movies. I'll watch a movie 10, 20 times if it's really good.
Just a good way to disappear, especially from any stresses you have during the day. Like, it's either that or become an alcoholic. I don't really want to become an alcoholic, so I'll watch movies.
Yeah.
What's your favorite book and why?
So my favorite book right now is Extreme Ownership by Jocko Willink. I absolutely love this book for leadership. It is we added it to our team core values, my core values, after I read it. I've read it a dozen times. I actually paid for him to come speak at our event last year. It was amazing to listen to him. We brought his team in to train some of our high level mastermind members. I'm a Christian too. So usually I answer that question other than the Bible. So that's how I answered it. So, Jocko Willink's Extreme Ownership, if you haven't read it, highly, highly recommend it. And I recommend listening to it because him and Leif read it. And it's just some powerful stuff. It's really awesome.
Especially that powerful voice of his.
Yeah. He's the same guy in person. I'll tell you that. got to spend some time with him last October at our event in San Diego. And, He's an interesting character. So.
Right on.
Nice guy though. Really nice.
Yeah. If you could give advice to your 20-year-old self, what would that advice be?
Get started earlier doing this. Like you're 20, you're old enough. jump in and do what you do now. Like I'd say I was this like closet entrepreneur. So but I just didn't know it. So if I could give advice to anybody, I'd say it would be the advice to the parents out there. Like, know how to identify the entrepreneur in your in kids. We are like the 1% of the world, right? That's going to change the world. So figure out what that is. I did a podcast recording with Gino Wickman on his book, Entrepreneurial Leap. And that book is about identifying, are you an entrepreneur or are you not an entrepreneur? I would encourage all parents out there to read that book so you can identify kids that are in your Boy Scout troop, kids that, your kids, anybody they come across, are they entrepreneurs? And if they are, like, give them the push to take that leap. Because I wish that I had started earlier. Obviously, your journey is your journey. And the path that you take, there's a reason for all of this. When I look back, like, everything was by design. But if I was 20, I'd say, man, I wish I could just explore that. Like, you were trading baseball cards and selling at baseball card shows and doing all of this stuff. You were an entrepreneur from the beginning. Why didn't you explore that earlier? So,
what about last year? What advice would you give yourself last year?
Stack more cash and prepare. I honestly don't think I would do anything differently. I think we're put in on these places. We're put in these challenging situations, these scenarios, somebody quitting or somebody being hiring the wrong person. Like, we're put in on this journey for a reason, in this path. And like, the biggest thing for me is like, when we're on the backside of this, are we proud of who we were in the moment? So like, really think about the decisions that you're making right now and make sure that you can stand by it and you're making the right decision for the information that you have. And so I don't know that I would give myself any different advice than I did. Looking back, you could always rechange some of that stuff. But I just making sure that your company is profitable is probably the most important thing. And if it's not, get there as fast as you can. And really, you know, we use profit first model in my business and stack that cash and have those reserves. So fortunately we did. Obviously I'd like to be in a stronger position than I am, like anybody, but I think we're all on this journey. So don't be too hard on yourself. Maybe that's the best advice I give myself from last year.
Right. All right. Well, do you have any specific ask for your or our audience?
No, there is one thing that we didn't talk about that I am really passionate about. Yeah. And it's actually probably the reason that I made this post to reach out to you to come on the podcast. And it's this veterans event that we're doing. And so I canceled it, the in-person event. I had to. I was forced to cancel it. But it's May 29th and 30th. And it was going to be in St. Louis. We had an event venue lined up and everything. And we may have still been able to have it at that time. But the problem is, the military demobilized everybody. The DOD came out with a policy that there's no travel till May 11th. So people couldn't even buy tickets and get their orders approved, like their leave approved or anything. Mm-hmm. So what this event is basically like a career fair for real estate is the way I'm describing it, where I'm bringing in somebody from every aspect, like wholesaler, a flipper, a real estate agent who runs a huge real estate team, a lender, a multifamily investor, a syndicator, a land developer, like somebody who does a little bit of everything. So I think this event is, and it's all people who were active duty or are currently active duty military. And we're talking primarily to the military folks, but it's really for anybody who wants to like learn a niche and see like, what about that person? Like as a wholesaler, I know the skills that are needed to be a wholesaler. If you have this is the area you should go. If you don't have this, you're probably not going to be that good at it. Like project management as a flipper, you need to be able to work with contractors, be okay with dealing with retail buyers, and have a be able to understand project management. So that this event, and then there's like wholesalers that might want to transition to multifamily. So seeing what other avenues are like. So it's a little bit of that. We're doing it virtually now, so it's going to be a virtual event. By the time this podcast comes out, the landing page will have been shifted from a in-person event to a virtual event. But it's at veteranslive.com. So you can go to veteranslive.com and just check it out. And it's not just for military members. Non-military folks can come, but we are going to be all 100% of the money that we bring in for that event is going to a veterans charity. So I'm not making money for it or anything.
Let me ask you this. How much are the tickets?
Right now, the tickets are $199 for E6 and below. So active duty E6 below, and $299 for anybody else. And I'm not sure if we're going to adjust the pricing or not since it's a virtual event. But we're kind of talking about maybe adding in some extra bonuses and stuff. But you don't have to pay to fly there. You don't have to pay for the hotel anymore, all that stuff. And I think the speakers are, they're pretty awesome. with people that we have.
Well, I'm going to do this for our audience. Whoever shares this podcast the most when it is released, REI Society, we'll go ahead and buy 2 tickets and give that to anybody that is interested in sharing this the most so that we can spread the word. How about that?
That is awesome. That's awesome. Yeah. I really appreciate that. The best thing is I'm going to have some contests going on for this thing too, because my parents wanted to donate 2 people to take a trip. So it was going to be their tickets, their flight, their hotel, all that stuff. So they'll be able to sponsor a bunch more tickets too. So I'll be figuring out a contest a lot like what you just did. It's awesome. It's amazing.
Yeah. Dude, I can't wait to help. So man, dude, this is so good. This has been an incredible podcast, and I like what you're doing with the Veterans REI Conference. It's so awesome and wonderful, and trying to make a mission to help and serve more people. Dude, what's next up your sleeve?
I have no idea. I will tell you, the biggest thing is I got to figure out how to unplug my mind from all this stuff. I constantly want to create, do more, be more, all of these things. And I think the biggest thing for me, the next step is, now my son is 5 years old. He's almost 6. He'll be 6 in June. And I've really got to figure out how to be present for my family. Because what I said was, look, I built this incredible business. We're financially free. We're in a position where I work because I want to, not because I have to, just like I wanted to. And I've got to figure out how to make sure that there's a separation between work and family. And that's the thing that I struggle with the most. So for me, I'm a soccer coach. I'm always there at home for the kids and things like that. But just simplifying things and getting clear on what I'm going to do. I don't think I need to. I got to learn how to say no sometimes. So I just build. And the next thing is to hire a COO for 7-figure flipping and be able to pull myself out of that a little bit more and then be able to work on the next thing. I do have one more thing that I'm working on that could be really huge outside of the real estate space. But I'll hopefully talk about that in like 6 months once I got the right people on board and the patent's all done. We have a patent pending on it. So we'll see what happens. That's going to be exciting. So when that rolls out, I'll talk more about it.
Yeah. We'll have to bring you back for round 2. So last question. I know you've thrown in a couple of websites here and there, but where can people find you on the social and webs? How about that?
Yeah. 7-figure flipping is probably the best place. 7figureflipping.com's got like all the stuff that we do. We didn't put the veterans event on there, but same thing on like Facebook and Instagram. I think it's at 7figureflipping.com or at 7figureflipping, something like that. The number 7. So that's probably the best place. I hang out at all those events that we do. So the Flip Hacking Live's on there. That's probably the best event to come and like see. We were going to be in Atlanta actually, April 17th and 18th. I just had to cancel that event. So our mastermind meeting was in Atlanta, April 17th and 18th. And that's going virtual too now. So our next event is in July for our mastermind members in Chicago. And then we're October, we're down. And the October event is so great because anybody can come. It's not like you don't have to pay $25,000 to join the mastermind to come to the event. It's like $650. It's in Orlando, big resort. We do all kinds of stuff. We bring in awesome speakers. I've got a couple like paid motivational speakers that come in, and then the rest of people that speak are just like 20 speakers that are doing this business right now. It's not they're not selling stuff. They're coming on stage. They're part of our community. They're just delivering the goods. I tell them not to hold anything back. If you're going to speak on our stage, you hold nothing back. It's not like go to this website and check it out, like a opt-in pages or anything. It's just like give it. If you're going to be on my stage, you got to give the goods. So it's cool. That's a good event. Yeah.
Excellent. Well, I still can't wait to help you share your mission with the Veterans REI Conference. And guys, everybody listening to this, share. Let's give away 2 free tickets. Let's help this man with his mission. Bill, thank you so much for taking your time and being here today.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I had a good time. This was good. You asked me some questions and we talked about some stuff I've never talked about before. So that's it's pretty rare when you come on some of these podcasts and stuff. So I had a lot of fun. Thanks.
Awesome, man. I can't wait to talk to you again for round 2. Take care, man.
All right, Brandon. See ya.